In the words of legendary Lou Gehrig, hello, dog fans, and welcome to the Sound the Siren podcast, where everything matters, including beating Michigan. How are you guys doing today?
You know what I'm saying, man. It's do-rag activities over here. We're doing good. Just waiting for Monday.
Let's go. Yeah, can't be much better than we are right now. Except maybe after Monday.
I know, man. Just riding this crazy high. Man. Don't even know how to act a little bit, you know? It's like the classic Ron Burgundy. Like, what do I do with my hands? You know, I don't know what to do with my activities right now. we'll start off with drinks, my men. We'll go with you, DJ, first. What you drinking on tonight?
Mom made me a little Moscow Mule with a special cup.
Of course, it's gold. Gotta be.
Yes.
Gotta be gold.
Has to be.
It's a royalty weekend.
What about you, Missy Dunn?
Oh, you know me. Yeah, I got to keep it classy, man. I got the refreshed, the purified version of the water on this side.
Hey, man, me too. Y'all know how I get down, man. 25-8, you know, extra day, extra hour. I got my high-quality H2O.
It all Madden.
I know y'all watching the game together last weekend. Were you sipping on last Monday?
Oh man, how many blue moons did I finish, bro?
Oh man, yeah, Damn. He was had us in there. Yeah, we had enough. With some more to go around this Monday. I got to go grab some cigars. I'm trying to be able to celebrate the right way.
Yeah, you watching at your place again?
Yeah, I think so, man. You know, Hood and I, we type people, we got to watch games like that in a controlled environment. Because if it's frustrating, or I don't like feeling the energy of folks if they're too negative or too, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, I had some people over watching the game at my house, mostly good friends. One of them was like a guy I know, I was in front of, but doesn't know me that well. And afterwards, he's like, damn, I didn't realize you're a diehard like that. I'm like, well, now you know.
Yeah, man. Just question. Anybody got any stupid tweets?
I got some stupid spaces. I mean, that's kind of been the theme since Texas. At least Texas, man, we respect all y'all, man. Homework and the crew, Cole, y'all know who you are. Just having some perspective, man. It's just seemed like Michigan, they just so... It's not even the fact that you're confident in your team, which is great. It's just, at least be respectful when you're saying stuff. You know what I mean?
They're super defensive, bro.
Yeah, you try to say, okay, we don't play defense. We're saying, okay, you don't play anybody on offense. So you could say the numbers are inflated both ways. And we're trying to just simply tell them that in different matters, different subjects, and they just have a way of just being just disrespectful with it a couple of times, especially with Hood on there, just trying to make points. And they're just, you know, they go about it just a totally different way. I get being prideful, but nah, I mean, that stuff ain't going to fly.
Yeah, I don't have a specific like stupid tweet, but I got a stupid statement. I guess that was made in one of those. I think it was like dunked on or something like that. Dude said that Braylon Trice is probably not better. He's like the seventh or eighth best pass rusher that they've played all year.
He's not even the seventh or eighth best pass rusher in the country. He's better than that. What the hell?
It just lets you know that they pick and choose what they want to watch and look at.
It was real hard, you know. That's tough to listen to. But I'll say overall, you know, stupid tweets are 24-hour spaces. If they're ever advertised, do not join. Get some rest, take a shower, wash your feet, put some lotion on.
Hood said they're talking about taking shifts on that 24-hour spaces.
Bruh. Co-host, cover it for the next 4 hours, man. I'm going to sleep. I'm covering my girl.
Yeah, that's trash.
I got a stupid tweet. I mean, I got several, but I'm going to go with this one. What do you know? It's a duck fan. A breadless duck. I'm not even going to read the whole conversation. I'm just going to say what he says. He says, they, meaning UW, really haven't proved anything outside of three NFL-level wide receivers who have consistently bailed out just above average QB. If you don't see how lucky they've been, you haven't been watching.
Lord have mercy, bro.
Some tweets write themselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he got ratioed. 20 responses, 20 responses, one like, 10 quote tweets.
It's like, wait, what?
Some of the things that just be said in general just be wild. And people show me a lot of love for the things I say, and I'd be like, why? And I mean, I guess I get it now.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Like, some of these people think, a lot of Oregon fans just think we've been so lucky. I mean, sure, there's been some lucky things that happen in probably any team, but I have a friend of mine, three or four victories, she's like, oh, you guys are lucky to win. I'm like, damn, was everyone lucky? Like, what the hell?
At some point, it's a trend.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We got any more stupid tweets?
Luck favors the prepared.
Hey, that's facts. I like that. All right, man. Let's slide right into it, man. Any thoughts on the Sugar Bowl? You know, good things, bad things, whatever the case may be. Any just general thoughts, and then I'll get to like MVPs and stuff.
Yeah, I think from a, I mean, national perspective, it was good to see us. You know, I mean, being isolated and really, you know, being able to showcase what we do on that stage. And just making, you know, making the Pac-12, not even making the Pac-12 proud, but just putting a product on the field that, yeah, we can go toe-to-toe with anybody. And it wasn't just a fluke of when you was hearing us saying this is the best conference in the country all year. Offensively, I mean, fireworks. That was the best offensive game I think we've played as far as just efficiency, how clean our shot plays were. Ryan Grubb as a play caller, Marion, you know, the tendencies of the defense with what we like to do on offense. I wanted to see us run the ball a little bit more, but aside from that, I was really happy with the outcome, and I was never really worried about, you know, the score getting out of hand on, you know, going the other way or anything like that. I thought we controlled the game. And made it a little closer than we wanted at the end, but I was really proud of the boys. Defensively, a little disappointed in just our approach, just the physicality aspect. I know we're better than that, and I know we're going to show a better product on the field on Monday, especially up front. I've seen a lot of, not even guesses, but just a lot of bad eyes. I'm sure a lot had to do with just taking that month off and just kind of getting used to that, the speed of the game again, knowing that, you know, Texas did have some boys that can absolutely fly. So kind of being aware and kind of playing on your heels a little bit, you know, especially in that first half. But yeah, I just want to see us play with much more physicality, because I know this game coming up is going to be, could be won and lost in the trenches. Not saying it's going to be, but could be. And I know we can put forth a much better effort, similar to what we did in the Pac-12 championship.
That was some good basketball on grass, if you ask me. but yeah, I mean, everything that Dark and Knight was saying, I mean, offense balled out. I mean, got really frustrated at the end, like, because again, we were there to put teams away, and we just can't do it. And so I'm hoping this coming Monday is the time that we finally do that. But yeah, besides like the last 6-7 minutes of the game, we controlled the whole game pretty much up until then. You know, our guys have proven to show, like, on big games, they're ready. That's like, they get up for these things. Like every big game there is, like, we're winning or coming close to it. I mean, shoot, what is the board's record against ranked teams? Is it 8-0, something like that?
It's like 9-0, 10-0 now.
Yeah,
it's like double digits.
So yeah, he definitely gets them ready, and I mean, yeah, that was awesome on so many levels. Like, obviously with the win, but yeah, just everyone was talking about Penix all week about how legit he is. Like, he definitely boosted his rankings in the draft, boosted his stock there. Yeah, I mean, the defense made some plays. That EJ play, I mean, as we all know, like, we've seen it many times. Like, that was amazing. Like, you know, he's been struggling most of the year, been picked on too, but to come out and, you know, virtually win us a game there, that's awesome. Like, you know, people can be comparing that to the Sherman play against the 49ers 10 years ago, pretty similar. But yeah, I mean, I'm just excited to come out with the W, no matter how it happened, even though I was stressing at the end. I was stressing hard.
Yeah, man, I was big stressing. Mm-hmm. I was laying on the ground, bro. My head in my hands, bro.
Yeah,
I mean, just parroting what you guys said, I think one of my primary takeaways just personally was, I'll start, I guess, with some good in regards to the pass defense. Man, I really love the way our corners played. This was the first game I saw, you know, and obviously it was the best wide receiver group that we've played all year. And this was the first time I saw us consistently play the ball. And that includes the EJ play. You know, there was a play, I think, also on that last drive where Ewers throws the ball up to Adame on Jabbar, and Jamar makes a play on the ball as well. You saw a PBU from Jabbar when he was locked up on Xavier Worthy. You also saw him, a technical machine, preventing Worthy from getting to a ball. So you saw a lot of, like, I would say our cornerbacks playing really, really well. Where I would like to see some improvement from that same unit, not just corners, but the DBs. I think that time off a little bit, you know, really impacted tackling. You know, you mentioned the defensive line, and I think it really impacted tackling. That was an important play. That could have been, I think it was a running play, and it could have been a tackle for loss. And, you know, Cam Fab comes up and misses a tackle that he usually makes. You know, I saw Dom, you know, I think it was the first touchdown of the game for them. Dom kind of ran over by, you know, Jaden Blue a little bit. That's not his MO at all, at least pop him. Or, you know, so it just felt like, you know, they kind of were a little bit waiting for the fourth quarter, but even still, just not being overly physical. And then I would just say the 10th game in a row where we won by 10 or less. So just the resiliency of the team. And then not even just that, you know, overcoming the specific adversity of Dylan Johnson's situation. You didn't see DeBoer slamming his headset, frustrated that's how that happened. Or it was just, hey, staff, get the defense ready to make the play now. It's not on the offense anymore. So it was just passing the buck, big your brother up, you know, those types of things. So just another showing of the brotherhood element, us picking each other up, and just showing that experience in those close games. It's a record at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Bro.
Yeah, and what you're saying about DeBoer, I love his demeanor on the sidelines. He never looked tense or stressed at all. Like, we're comparing to Sark, where he, like, you can tell he's feeling it, like, every play. He's getting that pressure and getting more tense. But I love his demeanor out there. Yeah, you know, he's just, like, he's thinking ahead, thinking about the situation. And so I'm glad to have him out there on the sidelines. And, yeah, about Cam Fab, man, he's been – so good all year. Just that game kind of reverted to his old self, and so hopefully you just need that to get through.
Get out your system.
Yeah, exactly.
Let that first one get out your system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think, yeah, from a tackling standpoint and just a overall physicality standpoint, both the O-line and the defensive line, I just think it was that, all right, we had this month layoff. They definitely needed that first game to knock off the rust. So I think that we can be better on both sides of the ball, which is scary, especially offensively, where I think we're going to present much more of a challenge being able to control the clock with the running game as well, especially against Michigan, which I like our offensive line a lot.
Yeah, definitely got to give props to the O-line. You know, obviously Mike was mad elusive back there at times. But for the most part, you know, I mean, including DJ, our pass pro was elite again. You know, kept Mike clean, gave him clear lanes to step up or slide, you know, allowed Mike to be poised. So I really enjoyed the way our offensive line showed up. And, you know, they're taking all that stuff personal, you know, all the XYZ small, your whole line small, and Joe Moore is just, you know, it's for clout, whatever the case may be. You know, it's invalid. It's a cursed award, all this other stuff. Nah, we're going out there and we're proving it. Also, too, I mean, it's a really obvious thing. But just how locked in Mike was, I think just seeing his demeanor in the game, he didn't, like, get, other than, like, some of the celebrations after scores, his, like, facial expression was the same. Like, it was just another game, and he's just, all is cool, yep, we good. And then just seeing him, you know, get off the plane today, you know, just that aura, man, just makes a lot of people confident just in him and, you know, seeing it on the field, off the field. So that was a really good sign from just kind of noticing on the sideline.
It was interesting. I was watching the replay of the game, and I really only got through the first quarter. But after hearing about Sark saying, you know, some of his players were tight and tense and all that, and I'm literally after the defensive stop, I'm literally watching our offense come on the field, and Rome and Jalen and everybody pumping the crowd up coming on the field. Mm-hmm. It wasn't let's walk on the field, let's all right, get in the huddle and go. No, they're pumping the crowd up, excited. Like, get up, get off your feet, get on your feet. And so that told me everything as far as not even just how confident they were, but the game plan going in and how well they thought they were going to execute.
Yeah, and I mean, I wasn't there at the game, but speaking to people that were there, like, after that first, I mean, not to your point about, like, the players being stressed, but also, like, the fans, too, there. After that first drive, when we got that long pass to Polk and got the touchdowns, like, people were saying, the Texas fans, like, jaws dropped, eyes widened, like, oh, shit, like, they're for real. They're legit, and I'm sure the players probably feeling that same way for Texas side, too. Yeah. I don't know. I was going to say. Damn, I don't know. Go.
I'll just say really quick, too. While I feel like the interior defensive line, you know, could have played a little better, you know, Braylon Troy single-handedly, Jesus
Christ. Put his imprint on the game.
And not only in just the pass game, you know, it's people looking at the pressures and the sacks and those things, and dude, he was making a ton of plays in the backfield on running backs, a ton of plays in the line of scrimmage, or a couple yards past the line of scrimmage, stopping big runs, shoestring tackles. Man, it was, that man was everywhere. I think, you know, we talk about defensive MVPs, and Lord have mercy, I think he might have single-handedly, you know, destroyed their game plan. You know, that's one person on the D-line too. So there was also something, I noticed, I watched the game today, and the announcer, I think it was under a minute left, so I think there's like 20 seconds left in the first half, and the dude said, the announcer said, they converted their first third down of the game. You know, and that was it at the end of the first half. You know, their first six drives, including the muffed punt, four of the six ended in punts. You know, so our defense bowed up. Our defense, you know, obviously outside the muff punt where they got the short field, our defense bowed up. Our defense showed up and gave our offense an opportunity to get a lead. Just wish, obviously, that punt return situation didn't happen. Could have pulled away, but there were multiple times even after that to pull away. And I think going into next year, one of the big things for the staff, I would say, is, you know, stepping on people's necks moving forward. You know, getting up and then not executing, you know, maybe even getting off script and trying to get cute with triple reverse pass, flick backs and all this other stuff when you're up by, you know, two possessions, just to kind of win with style points. At some point, let's just
be unapologetic about it.
Yeah, be unapologetic about it. You know, you're the new kids on the block, so you're probably trying to show off your scheme on the highest level. I get it. But at some point, just run that up.
You don't need to. Yeah. Just so I don't sound like an idiot when I lost my train of thought earlier, I remember what I was going to say. We kind of moved on from it, though. But you're talking about, like, how the offensive line balled out, and, like, with the protection, and then DJ with his blocking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like he's going to play. But, yeah, that was my biggest worry. Like, if he didn't play,
was his pass blocking. How much would miss that for his coming game? And the guys behind him can't do the same. I mean, maybe they can. They're not the same running too, but they can probably get. They're closer to him on that than his pass blocking because, his is elite and it's one of the best in the whole country. And so that'd be a huge loss if we didn't have him come to Natty.
I think he was on the. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think he was on the sideline at the end of the game though to see the end of the game, and I don't think he had a boot on.
No, he didn't have a boot on. They like carted him out, but then he was there for the celebration. Yeah,
he came back. Yeah, and he didn't have a boot on. So,
no.
I mean, it's probably one of them things, like in the moment, probably it was a re-aggravation, but he's going to be fine.
Yeah,
if anything, they're going to shoot that up with some Toradol, and he's going to deal with the pain after the game's over.
I think it'll be like similar to like the WSU game where you can tell he was hurting, but he was battling out there. Like, and like he might be limping when he's not running, but when he gets the ball, like he forgets all that. So I think that's how it looked like this coming Monday.
Really quick, just some offensive and defensive MVP, and you can't pick Braylon or Mike.
I know mine, B. My offensive MVP would be, man. I mean, I want to say the O-line, but I'm gonna say Jack Westover.
Oh, damn, I was going to say that.
Just being clutch and being the security blanket that he is. Just Mr. Dependable when all hell breaks loose. Defensively, I would say, man, I'm going to give some love to EJ for making one of the biggest plays of the year and the confidence he showed while making that play. So I'm gonna give EJ some love, even though, you know, I know DeBarber's had the tough assignment of Xavier Worthy and pretty much held him to, you know, one catch, and I know EJ kind of gave up the other one, but EJ, just for making that play, I'm gonna give it to EJ.
That's a good one. Both are good. Yeah, you stole mine with Jack Westover. He was gonna, like, besides Penix, obviously Jack, he's so clutch. Whenever the ball's thrown to him, it's just like a magnet to his hands. So yeah, he's always clutching. He was so good that game too. Yeah, defensively, obviously Trice, but can't pick him. EJ with that last play is a good one. I mean, I don't know. That's tough. Like, I think Dom, you know, he maybe made some mistakes, but he came out and made some good plays too out there. They're pretty key. That's probably what I'll go to if it wasn't for Trice or maybe EJ. But yeah, Jabbar's right there too. Yeah, but I probably would say Dom Hampton.
Yeah, I like that. Basically snagged both of mine with Jabbar and
Dom. You
didn't
really hear JT's name till the, you know, waning moments of the game, which is big.
Exactly. I think he led their team in catches. But even on that last drive, Dom strapped him up, I think, on two targets. So, and then also, too, just the pass defense in general. I think Adonai Mitchell had 12 targets.
Mm-hmm.
Four catches. So.
Talk about it.
I mean, they want to talk about our pass defense. We literally, you can have as much yards as you want, but we make it ineffective. So what I'll say for offense, it's going to be an odd one. It's not like a box score type of situation, but just what he forced the defense to respect. And that's Tybo Rogers. On offense.
Yeah, I was thinking that one too. That's good, yeah.
Coming in as a freshman and not playing, I think, in the last few games as well. And then coming into that stage and being able to provide a spark, whether it was a 2-yard run, a 3-yard run, that big scamper, I think, for 10-plus. You know, when DJ wasn't able to pound the rock inside, he was able to at least make them respect the run with some of his opportunities and some of his totes. So I'll say that. I'll say Tybo. And then, like I said, I mean, it's tough. He snagged Jabbar and Dom, but I'll do another kind of unsung. Just made some really, like, timely plays, clutch plays, and then also seeing the front that we came out to start in. I got to show him love, and that's Fatui Tui Tele. Had a couple of deflections at the line of or had a deflection line of scrimmage at the end of the game. I saw him chirping to the offensive line all game as well.
Yeah.
So I definitely felt like he showed up for sure. And I'm super excited for him to lead the pack next year. So,
oh, man, it's been so great seeing him come on at the end of the year. I mean, he's been an afterthought the last couple of years, but he's played well the last few games of the regular season, the last couple of games, conference championship and Sugar Bowl.
Agreed. Moving on. So I got a question that I just kind of thought of as we were going. I mean, I just kind of watching some of these videos on X, man. Just what are you guys' thoughts on the overall legacy that Michael Penix is leaving? You know, I see people talking about, you know, poses for statues and, you know, he finished second in the Heisman. And, you know, some people are saying greatest quarterback here of all time. Jake Browning showing him that, giving him that platform, the way he got off the plane, you know, his demeanor. What do you think he means to the city kind of overall? And then what do you think his legacy here is?
I mean, especially with the win, I think he's a legend already, but with the win, he cemented himself as one of the best Seattle sports stars that we've ever seen. He's definitely the best Husky quarterback in history. And I believe it just transcends, you know, not even what we thought we could have here as a quarterback. We've had really, really good quarterbacks, but from a leadership standpoint, from an adversity standpoint, the team that he's, you know, obviously fortunate to play with, but we're fortunate to have him as well. But just collectively, just having a chance to do something this special, like we're never going to forget this, you know, ever. And just having him play so consistently, especially for 2 years, I definitely think, especially with the win, yeah, we definitely need to construct that statue of him pulling the bow and arrow. I can definitely see that outside of Husky Stadium for sure.
That'd be sick.
But yeah, he's a made man, but I think he wants to win this just as bad as we all want the team to win it. And I think this is honestly a team of destiny. Like I said, when I put that hat on and got that hat and it said the campaign, it just gave me a feeling about this year from the start of the year when we did our early predictions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he leave me here with, like Denzel, he leave me here with something. He ain't leave with the Heisman. He leave here with something.
He leave here with something.
We only got one more thing to get from round away. I'm leaving him with something. So we got that. We're going to leave him with something on Monday. And I truly think, obviously, he's going to be the catalyst. And he deserves to have that allure and that mystique in Seattle moving forward, for sure.
Yep. I mean, you said it great. Like, he's already cemented himself as a legend. Like, I think that's no doubt. And, yeah, if he leads us to victory on Monday, like, he's arguably the GOAT for Husky football. I mean, there's a couple other guys that's up there too, but like, he's definitely, like, if you have a Mount Rushmore, in my opinion, he's right there in it. I mean, it's just not just everything about his play, like his personality, his swag, like it's different from any quarterback that we've ever had. I mean, I think, like, he's just so well known. I think a lot of it has to do with also the NIL, that he can do like commercials and things like that I don't think guys could done, and advertisements. And like, yeah, he's way more known than any player, UW player, I should say, that I could remember, like, to anyone I'm talking with that's not as interested in sports or especially Husky football. Yeah, he's going to forever be remembered as a legend for UW football.
And the it brought the do-rag activities back to back to Seattle, man. Just a couple of things that I felt like were valuable. You know, it's super funny, man. It was KP that said it at, I think it was last year. He was just like, you know, with CP, you know, we had a crazy defense, but, you know, while defense can win you championships, it's not marketable. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you have a defensive star, you must have like this super gritty town and all those types of things. And he was just like, you know, having a quarterback and a marketable quarterback is what puts your team on the map. And we're just seeing that. So from a marketing standpoint, he's taken the program to unprecedented levels, allowed guys like Casey Byers a ton of content to cook, you know, just with all, obviously, the wins, but then highlight plays, his you know, showing off his skill set. And obviously he has a squad around him to help him out. But just the overall marketing of the program, you know, we were trying to, you know, reach different parts of the country. And now, you know, we've done so. I think Dijon Lee, or yeah, I think it was Dijon Lee today had us. I think it's top 8, top 10, something like that. That's one of the best players in the country. And, you know, getting your name out there with a good team, but having like a significantly marketable player, showing that you can make a bunch of money here, I think is important. And then also too, in my notes, I just had just kind of created a culture of winning here on and off the field, like set the standard for what the best players, not necessarily look like, but act like on and off the field. So, you know, guys like Austin Mack and guys like Will Rogers, when they come in and fill his shoes, there's a standard of class, you know, off the field. There's a standard of integrity. There's a standard of leadership. You know what I mean? There's a standard of selflessness and sacrifice. So, you know, I think that was a most important kind of tone setter, in my opinion. And no shade, but if you look at the situation in L.A., you know, what type of what somebody's going to come into that situation and there's no tone set at the position. You know, it's just an NIL position. So there's no off the field standard there. There's no character standard there. And I feel like he's definitely done that and left that legacy here, too. Not just like, you know, the bombs and stuff like that, but culturally set the tone moving forward.
Facts.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. All right. We ain't doing predictions just yet. We're going to do a little preview, just get a few things off your chest about what you kind of see and how we match up with Michigan. Just some tidbits, maybe.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, Michigan wants to play this game in the phone booth. J.J. McCarthy's a good quarterback, but I think they do try and hide him. They allow him to play in efficiency with play action, so stopping a run is going to be critical. And not allowing our linebackers to get necessarily, you know, drawn up on the run to kind of get those whole shots behind them. They have two tight ends that they kind of go to that are really athletic, really good. They got A.J. Barner and Colston Loveland. One's 89, one's 18. Colston kind of reminds you of a more athletic Cade-ish Auden in a way. He's way more athletic than Cade, I should say that. But that type of body type, you know, it's 6'5", 245. That's what he likes to use in the middle of the field as his blanket. He has Cornelius Johnson on one side, who kind of is, well, you tell Hood he's like a mirror image of EJ. So those two matched up on each other is literally is like the two Spider-Man memes pointing at each other. And same thing on the other side with Mr. Wilson. He's a diminutive receiver. He's really quick, really fast. He kind of reminds me a lot of Amon-Ra St. Brown of the Lions, who's a kind of perfect matchup for Jabbar, who's a technician. So I like our matchups as far as with the receivers. They've had been using a freshman in the slot, number 82, who's got some quickness, and they like to take advantage of mismatches on linebackers, kind of with over routes and crossers. With that smaller stature type of guy, kind of hide him as well. They're very calculated with their shots. They're not a bombs over Baghdad team. You're not going to have to necessarily worry about them getting behind you. So your eye discipline is going to be key. So similar principles to Darkening Oregon. And
Real quick, because it seems like maybe correct me wrong, because it seems like you watch more than that, but like those deep shots that they take, a lot of them seem to be like on play action from what I've seen. So
everyone, when they do take their shots downfield, it's usually a guy wide open. Mm-hmm. Or he's really safe with the ball. He's not going to try to fit in a really tight window. Kind of see like in the, you know, first play of the Bama game when J.J. rolls out right, instead of just throwing the ball away, he's going to give you an opportunity to catch it just because he's not asked to do that on a regular basis. Try to make a play like that on the run when you could just throw it away and be safe. He tried to, you know, go above and beyond what he's asked to do and almost, you know, it almost cost him type of thing. I do think he can hold on to the ball a lot and he can be indecisive when he does want to run the ball. And I think that's when our pass rush is going to be key, especially on the other side with ZTF. I think ZTF needs to have one of his better games as a Husky. I just think a lot of the times because he's not as good against the run that he kind of can get wild during the pass. And for this game, just need him to keep his outside contained and actually just use his, he can kind of play a little more freely in this game and kind of just hold, set the edge and just stay outside and just kind of rely on our linebackers to fit and feel. But their defensive line, they're deep. They have a few guys up front, Graham, and a few others that they're not necessarily like overwhelmingly, you know, great necessarily, but they collectively, they're really good. Nothing I don't think our offensive line can't handle. If they're not getting pressure with four, I think they're going to be in trouble. So they may have to send five. Sometimes they may send a six with like a Mikey Sanders still off the corner, up the slot corner. But Mike being able to set protections, a lot of stuff that most Big Ten quarterbacks weren't able to do this year, I think we're going to be able to really take advantage of and really test that secondary like they haven't been tested all year. Secondary's good. They got Will Johnson, who I respect a lot, who will be a potential, you know, first-round pick next year because he's just a true sophomore. And while Marvin didn't really be able to test him like he could have, he did get behind him for a deep pass. But like I said, again, he was playing with an inadequate quarterback. So I think Rome is going to have his chances to do some damage along with the other receivers with Mikey in the slot and Wallace on the other side. Wallace is susceptible to deep speed. And Mikey's good in space, but he can struggle against a bigger receiver. So just taking advantage of that. There's a lot of hole shots that are there, especially in the middle of the field where they ask their linebackers and slot guys to carry up the field. And Mike being able to place the ball where he wants is really going to be beneficial. And I really think Gentleman Jack could kind of have a Michigan State game where he scores three times as well, because you can kind of hide him, especially when you go five wide. Where you got to force Michigan to kind of come and tackle in space. They are a really good tackling team overall. I love their diversity and physicality, especially from their linebackers. But you can also use that against them with a lot of misdirection and a lot of exotic runs that we did not show against Texas, where we kept things vanilla. So I think you'll see us empty the chamber. And I think we can do some damage against that defense for sure. Lastly, what I'll say is we need our defensive line and linebackers to come and play big boy football this game. Set the tone. If you can get them behind the sticks, whether it's getting on a false start, tackle for loss, you get them behind the sticks, they struggle to pick up manageable first downs when they have to pass the ball. So what you want to do is you can limit the run any way you can to force JJ to throw. That's what you want to do.
Well, damn, bro. Yeah, well, that's literally the, you know, what's crazy is in my notes, you know, I have a lot of similar things. One of the little notes I have is just defensively, while they're disciplined, they're slow. You know, they're slow footed and I don't think their defensive team speed is able to, you know, match our speed on offense. One thing I will give their defense credit for is the way it can disguise coverages as well as can disguise pressures. So I do think that we will have some elements of where, you know, Mike may confuse, maybe the wrong word, but I'll say he may at times see different pictures in what he assumes is going to be there. And how does he respond in those moments? Are they turnovers? Are they just incompletions? What may have you? One of my primary concerns too is I do think that, but I would say for them, is I do think that they are going to stick with their bread and butter. I don't think the national championship game hype is going to have them change what they've been doing all year. I definitely feel like, you know, they took the ball out of JJ's hands at the tail end of the year. And I think they're going to try to run quorum. And, you know, we obviously saw how the adjustment for Texas when we respected that run came out and dang near a bare front for base. And I think we have the opportunity this time because they don't have the weapons on the outside that a Texas or an Oregon has. We're going to have the opportunity to actually sell out for the run, prioritize tackling in practice. And then you can live or die by, you know, Cornelius Johnson, Roman Williams, Tyler Morris, and Loveland beating you. You know what I mean? Like, Cam Fab and Dom have been elite on tight ends this year. Down the stretch of the season, DJ's held his own in coverage. And obviously, Jabbar is showing the hell out right now. So I have no concerns. Now, what they did do versus Bama is they, because they couldn't kind of get their weapons targets, the receivers targets too much on the outside, they started giving the ball to Tyler Morris and they started hiding Roman Wilson. So if they're able to find those little mismatches and things like that, get in Roman or, you know, the tight end on a linebacker or things like that, they definitely can take advantage of that. But I just don't think they have enough firepower. I think this game is by a wider margin than any of the other big games that we've played this year in regards to, I'm not going to say talent, but just styles. You know, we get up by 10 points or at least two possessions in a lot of these games. And if we even have that opportunity in this game, you know, Michigan Chase, you know, has Sharon Moore been uncomfortable seriously in a game? I know our offensive staff, I would, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but just by the way it seems, I think our offensive staff applies the most pressure to opposing offensive staffs. It's not only just defensive coordinators that are stressed out, and you know, it's offensive coordinators and play callers who have to account for our explosiveness, our how efficient we score, especially early. So it can get people off schedule, out of rhythm, off script, those types of things. And then finally, I'll just say, once again, you know, I'm expecting, you know, it's been since Stanford. I'm expecting Braylon Trice to make a significant impact on the game. And this is a quarterback that, you know, unlike Ewers, who doesn't make a lot of mistakes, you know, unlike Bo, who doesn't make a lot of mistakes, this is a quarterback that hasn't seen a ton of pressure outside of Chop Robinson all year.
If you can apply pressure to JJ, his eyes will drop down.
His eyes will drop down.
And wait, I thought Trice was the 7th best edge rusher. So
but that was the wildest thing I've ever heard. You know.
Whether it's Durfee, ZTF, you know, Sakai, like you need somebody from the other side that's going to collapse. I get it. Like, you know, even if Thule up the middle occasionally or MJ, I think MJ could have a tremendous impact on the game.
I agree.
Just being able to clap one portion of the pocket because you know Braylon's going to do his part.
And just thinking, like, and this is the last thing I'll say on it, just thinking stylistically, like, we have seen more of their style and more of their game plan than they've seen of us. You know, we've seen the Utahs, we've seen the Oregon States for multiple years at this point. We had the UCLA gaffe last year. You know, these even Cal, you know, even Boise State with Ginty. Like, we see that a lot of these teams are trying to run the ball on us, ball control, win the time of possession battle. And it's just not a recipe for winning. So they're going to – I feel like Michigan is definitely going to have to open up for sure.
Yeah, Utah is a perfect example where they run an NFL-type defense with different schemes and throw a lot at you, similar to Oregon as well. They're going to do a lot of, you know, window dressing, especially on the back end, try to be physical and all that, you know. Then we played even, you know, going back to even last year with Oregon State when they had a really good secondary, just being able to find and pick your spots. You know,
DJ, did you have any
you guys laid it out perfectly. I should have gone first because you guys are way better going all the details. No, I'm not saying I'm not joking, but because you guys explain it way better than me. And I'm impressed. Dark and Knight, like, you know, all the players from Michigan. I could have named like a third of the guys that you guys. So props to you on that.
That's one of his favorite teams. I appreciate
it. Come on, man. Yeah, my affinity for Michigan goes back, you know, from my childhood as well. Not saying you know, advocate for them, but I know a lot about their history.
I got you. I know them too. Sounds like. I mean, a lot of things that you guys said. I had on my notes here. You know, I just want to add, like, I think we got to play them like how we played Oregon State. We're talking about the defensive side of the ball.
make him run, like, got to stop the run so we can make him throw the ball. What Darker Knight said, something I was going to say too, like, getting them behind the sticks so they have to throw it. Thing that stands out to me about JJ McCarthy is like his indecisiveness. Again, that's another thing he has already mentioned, but yeah, make him make decisions. And we saw on that first play against Bama, should have been an interception. And like when he's like trying to figure out what to do, who to throw to, like he gets lost. Yeah, just make him throw the ball. Play like I said against Oregon State. It seems like they on defense. I mean, you guys know better. Like, they blitz a lot. You're talking about how, like, they hide.
Well, they blitz Bama because, one, Jalen Milroe couldn't read defense. Yeah. And, two, Alabama was second to last in the SEC in sacks per game. I mean, they give up almost 4 sacks a game. So they knew that they could take advantage of their offensive line. And that's what it was. It took Bama a whole half to adjust, you know, even a little bit. And it still kept that game competitive.
If they're not going to get pressure with four, they're going to need a blitz because they can't just let Penix sit back there and dice them up. Like, they need to get pressure on them. So whether it's with four or blitzing, I guess we'll see how that goes. And then offensively, honestly, we just need to play our game. Like, we don't need to cater to anything that they're doing. Just play our game, run our offense, and we'll be fine. We don't need to get too cute. Just do what we do. What we've been capable all year, and we'll be fine there. I think like the key to the game for me is how's our defense going to get off the field? Like, are they going to let them have 8-minute drives?
Yep.
That's how Michigan's going to win. And so we got to make sure we limit those.
Off the field.
Yeah. So that's my key is how our defense is able to stop them and get them off the field earlier than. Michigan wants to really quick, man.
I found out, so I don't know their names or anything like that, but it was mentioned and then, by multiple people actually. But apparently, this reffing crew, they like call a ton of holds, personal fouls, and pass interferences. And in my personal opinion, and this is just a conjecture, but. If you're running the ball, this is the wrong crew for you. You know, if they're a block in the back, a holding, you know, that type of crew, then, you know, and you got guys like Braylon, you got guys like Thule, you got guys like ZTF that get these phenomenal jumps. That could spell something bad for you. You know, we got two very, very elusive and instinctual linebackers. In Zotup and Eddie, who oftentimes get the first step on people and are really slippery off of blocks and can easily be held. So that's a tidbit as well. And then also if it's beneficial if you're a passing offense with this crew, you know, if there's a propensity to call pass interference a little bit more often, we're very, very strong at the catch point. But at the same time, being strong at the catch point allows you more opportunities to make it seem like things are pass interference. So that was just a small tidbit that I noticed as well.
Mm-hmm. What conference are they from? Do you know?
I think they said ACC. I think is what I heard. Yeah. I can double check that, but.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. When you're saying that, if they call out a pass interference too, like it doesn't benefit you if you're going to run it a lot. So that's a good point.
And just also like that, what's odd too, is when the refs have stayed out of our games, they have been some of the most exciting games of the year, you know? And then when they're involved in our games, they're like super ugly games or inefficient games for both teams. So I would just love it. Yeah. At the end of the day here, allow both these teams to play physical. This is number one versus number two, regardless of stars, regardless. And that's one of the narratives of this game that I love is that this is a culture game. This is program building at the highest level. It's not, I went and paid for a whole bunch of players and that type of narrative. It's not this super hype, super love for, you know, the 5 stars and things like that. These are two disciplined teams who are significantly bought into their head coaches, their processes, and their culture. So really, 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 really love that these two teams are the two teams that get to represent college football at the highest level. I was a little tired of all the fake talent evaluation out there.
Doug Scott's in shambles hearing that. He's all about the stars.
Hey, we are now moving on to the most fun part of the podcast.
Come on.
It's Michigan predictions. And this is about time where my man DJ hits the cup. See ya. Beat Michigan, DJ. You enjoy the rest of your night, brother. Hey, man. Bro Sidon.
Bro Sidon.
Hit me with King of the Broshen. Hit me with a prediction, man.
You know, when I was going back and forth, and you know, and I start smiling a lot when I get confident.
I'm cheesing right now, dog.
I'm fiddling. Yeah, I've tried to replay this game a bunch of times, and I just have a feeling we're gonna get at least one to two turnovers, some way, somehow. But I do think our defense will show up and play more physical than even they expect, and I expect us to have the ball more often than not. I got dogs winning. Somewhat comfortable. I got dogs winning 38-20.
Ooh, bro. See, this is why I love it. Hey, look, I said Texas was 41-31. I was mad close. I felt like I also felt like I got game flow kind of down for that game. And I'm feeling, you know, I said versus Oregon. Both times I felt like we were a two possession game team better than them. I felt the same way versus Texas, even to a higher degree. And, you know, I'm moving with that Mike Penix big step of energy, man. Free little hoolie.
Do rag activity.
Come on. Hey, and so I'm going by two possessions again. I got 38-24, man.
Hey.
So I got us
right there.
I got us getting up early, and then they're going to have to chase. You know, it may be, you know, keep it a buck, man. It may be out of hand early, and, you know, we just sitting on the ball. I just don't think, you know, people are trying to analyze the matchup and say, oh, these are polar opposites, so Michigan's a bad matchup for Washington, or these are polar opposites, so Washington's a bad matchup for Michigan. I think at the end of the day, Texas and Oregon – are they challenge us defensively and offensively in ways that Michigan cannot. I think Michigan's defense is a product of the offenses that they've played more so than a product of actually being good. I tried to make a point that, you know, if you just kind of have this, recent college football, history, If you put Michigan's defense in the context of just even the CFP era, they're not an elite defense, you know, and they've not had anybody seriously test them vertically with scheme. You had Ohio State do it, but they didn't have the quarterback to execute. There's a lot of holes in their defense, man. So I definitely think that, you know, we're going to expose that defense and create some real fun narratives out here in Seattle.
Oh, for sure.
38-24.
Come on. And what's crazy is I don't think we've played a complete game all year. I think you see that on Monday. Because everybody knows what's on the line.
I totally agree. What I will say, though, is Dylan Johnson's going to be significantly important. Like, and let's just hypothetically, he's neutralized. He's not in the game. It's going to make it a lot tougher, and I definitely would have an adjusted score in regards to that. But
I think we can still be balanced, and I think I know for sure DJ is going to play. But I've watched a far less superior Alabama offensive line push these guys off the ball and gash them for 8 to 10 to 12 yards, if not more. So being able to control the clock on our end, I think we're going to be able to do, because I think they're going into it thinking we're just going to be bombs over Baghdad in a cloud of dust. It's like they don't realize the multiple ways this offense can really beat you, and what terrorizes teams when they play against this offense is not a one-trick pony. You know what I mean? Being able to beat you in different ways, manufacture runs with short passes, the exotic screens we run, the way we utilize our receivers as blockers, the way our receivers can run with the ball, you know, just different ways you can manufacture that running game and get that defense to even hesitate or run sideline to sideline. I don't even think, you know, they've seen 40% of what this offense can be so far in the playoffs. So being able to unleash that and actually open things up is going to be critical. And I think we're going to put the nation on notice.
Yes, sir, man. I agree, man. Hey, man, beat Michigan, you know.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man.
Beat Michigan, baby. Mission done.
Hey, mission done, man. It's super surreal, man. I like, you know, it's super funny because after the Sugar Bowl I posted, like, I don't even know how to act right now. And that wasn't because it's like, oh, man, I'm about to act ignorant because we won. It's almost just this overwhelming, like, humble feeling, you know, and just being appreciative of the ride, you know, and also having a little bit of foresight that this is barbecue chicken, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
a little foresight and a little confidence.
It's a healthy respect, but just that confidence knowing, like, yeah, we're going to get this done.
Yeah, we're going to get this done. And now that it obviously, you know, football, shit happens, you know. But this is the highest level of confidence that I've had in a big game in 2 years, bro.
Yep.
In 2 years. Yep. And you can see it in the staff. You can see it in the fans. You can just see it in the people's energy. You know, you can even see it in some of the college football pundits, man. You know, they're giving their long soliloquies about how they love Washington and how resilient Washington is, and they're still picking Michigan.
I do, before we leave, just to not go back to the Texas game, but who I do want to see playing this game and who I appreciate the effort on that last play was Javon Parker.
Yep.
I think he can be instrumental in this game with interior pressure. So I would love to see a combination of him, Durfee, Lane, somebody, just throw combinations out there that you believe can just get after the passer and really cause some havoc that, you know, folks just been like, you said, I know, get Lane some run, give others some run to keep everybody fresh, you know what I mean? And imprint your will, man. Everybody thinking this game is going to be one way when Michigan has the ball. Show them what we about on the West Coast. Don't let them think they just go run up and down the field on you. You know what I mean? Bring your big boy pass, shed blocks, live in the backfield, make it hell on them boys. You know what I mean? Compliment the offense. Empty the tank. Empty the chamber. This is it. Ain't no prepping for another game. Ain't no, you know, film on nothing. This is it.
We going to put it on them, boys.
The sky don't lie.
Let's make this a Dylan Morris game.
Come on. Send Demo out right before you head to JMU.
All right, y'all. That is it for us tonight. For those who are in Houston, man, be loud.
Be proud.
Be proud. Go Huskies.
Go Dawgs, baby. Bring home that natty.
Beat Michigan.
You can support this podcast at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/soundthesirenpod/UW/support. Thanks. Go Dawgs.